Again, it's good to be back with you. Appreciate those last week's Shuei preaching. I did listen to his sermon on the flight home. Thought he did a good job. Appreciate Daniel filling in for this class last week as well. But it's always good to be, you know, it's good to go away on vacation, but it's always good to come home. This is a different kind of vacation because Crystal wasn't with me. She doesn't have vacation time accrued yet at her job, so she couldn't come. So it was just my week to get away, spend time with Mom and Grandma, but it was good. But it's good to be back. Good to get home. I got home, I said this on Wednesday night, but I got home at 3 a.m. Monday night. Wasn't supposed to get home that late, but I told Crystal I'll just sneak up into the guest room, you know, the room above our garage. I'll sleep up there so I don't wake the dog up and wake you up. So that's what I did, and it didn't wake her up, so I was thankful for that. But it's good to be back. I want to start this morning this subject by, and this topic that we're in of making and maturing disciples, share a story from my trip. So my mom lives in Everett, Washington, and of course the airport is south of her, south of Seattle. It was about a 40-minute ride. My mom does not care for interstate driving, traffic, and stuff like that. So she graciously and very kindly ordered a shuttle for me to take. And I've done that before. It's like a communal shuttle, but this one was different. This one ended up being just a guy who, kind of like Uber, but not Uber, hires himself out in this whatever shuttle service that he's a part of and just takes people wherever they want to go. So I got a ride, a private shuttle, with one guy. He let me ride in the front seat of his car. I didn't even have to wear a mask. And he asked me if I care. I said, I don't care. So he didn't wear a mask either. But had a really interesting conversation with him. About 25 or 26 years old. And he is from Afghanistan. He came from Afghanistan, I think he said, 7 years ago by himself. I don't know the circumstances how he was able to come, but no one else in his family, but the rest of his family is still in Afghanistan. He's engaged, and his fiance is also in Afghanistan. So I was just talking with him, you know, small talk, introducing this, that, the other thing, and thinking, okay, would there be an opening at some point to speak to him of Christ in some way? And we were just chatting, and so I was asking him about Afghanistan, what is the situation like out there? He said it's really bad. But what his desire is to go back and get married in Afghanistan and bring his wife back. Because once she's married to him, then I guess she can come back with him. But he wants to get his family back with him too. I think his parents and then, I believe, three siblings. I don't know if he has to pay a certain amount or get certain documents or what, but he's hoping to get them all here to the States. But it was really interesting to hear about all that. So we were talking about marriage a little bit. And I said, yeah, I've been married for 23 years and great experience. And then he asked me a question. He said, what is the key to marriage? And I thought, ding, ding, there's a little entry right there. So I said, I'll give you two answers. From a purely human perspective, humility is a key. Remain humble. I said, but I'm a Christian, and the Bible teaches me to keep Christ at the center of my marriage. That is the ultimate key. And so we started talking a little bit about that. Now, keep in mind, this is a 40-minute total ride, and by this time, we're about 25 minutes into the trip. So I knew my time was very short, and I didn't have a lot of time with him. But he said, he offered the fact that he was Muslim. And I said, how devout are you as a Muslim? I asked, is there a mosque near where you live? And he said, yes, there is. And he goes every Friday, which is their holy day. I didn't realize that, but their holy day is Friday. And they have prayers there five times a day on Fridays. I said, what is it about Friday that makes that day your day to go and offer prayers? And he didn't really know. I don't know if anybody said it. I've never heard that before, but anyway, so he does go to mosque, but it was interesting. He was saying, and he said, I've read things or heard from other people that Christianity, Islam, other religions, they're really about the same thing. Just a couple little minor, you know, some differences. I said, yeah, some pretty significant differences. But I explained it. I was able at least just to get a couple things talked about, like Christ is not just a prophet, but he's the Messiah, and that he rose from the dead the third day, saves people from sin, that kind of thing. But I thought later on, I wanted to share that at the beginning of this class today, because we're talking about this, obviously. But I also want to bring it out as well. Don't think that every opportunity that you may have to tell someone about Christ is going to be this full-fledged, let me spend 30 minutes and explain the gospel to you. It's not always like that. Sometimes it's just sowing a little seed. And I was praying on the way down. I said, Lord, you know what I'm able to say to this man and what I don't have time to say. But maybe this is just a seed. And so we'll bring someone else in his life that could water this, someone that he knows that could say more to him about Christ as well. But neat opportunity to talk with him as well. The flight I had from Seattle to Philadelphia, I sat next to a lady, and she was already a believer. So we had a really good conversation together for a short time again, but really good to have. That's always a blessing when you have that as well. You can share that common bond right away and talk about spiritual things. So that was a blessing to see as well. Well, I want to talk today and go on from this discussion about discipleship, the importance of discipleship, as I'm calling this lesson today. I want to talk about this because I think this is one of the subjects in this whole discussion that perhaps gets the least attention. Now, I will say this also. It seems like in recent years, this is growing in conversation. The importance of discipleship is growing, which I'm thankful for. I've been a part of a church years ago where discipleship wasn't really emphasized at all. All that mattered was, can you get a person to pray a prayer? That was really it. Can you get them to pray a prayer of the sinner's prayer of salvation? And we'd come each week, how many people did you see saved? 10 or 12 or, you know, whatever. And sometimes it was really that much, but we'd never see them in church. They would never get baptized, never see any growth, never see him again. Discipleship was not emphasized at all. You can have the flip side of that too, where all you talk about is the discipleship and you don't seek to evangelize anyone. I don't really see a lot of that misconception or misidea. It's usually the other way around. But I want us to be balanced in this. I want us to understand that the Great Commission, which is where we're going to start today, the Great Commission encompasses it all. The Great Commission is both what we typically call evangelism and discipleship. But even the title, Making and Maturing Disciples, I named the class, this particular study, this because what we're talking about in general is disciple making. And disciple making doesn't stop when a person prays a prayer. It really continues. So Matthew chapter 28, Jesus says, all authority has been given to me in heaven and earth. Go therefore, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I've commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always to the end of the age. It's the whole thing. So I want to talk today about this idea of discipleship, which is crucial in this process of disciple making. Today, I just want to give some basic thoughts regarding this. Next week, Lord willing, we'll come back and discuss it a bit further, perhaps in some more detail. But I wanted to lay some groundwork here today. I have four main ideas to point out. Main idea number one, you should strive to disciple a new convert. And by you, I don't mean the collective you. I mean you personally. You individually. Or me individually. If God does give you the privilege of being able to see someone come to Christ. That's a great joy. If God gives you that privilege of seeing someone come to Christ because of your witness or, you know, due to what you've said or your friend, whatever, then you ought to be the one who goes on and does what Jesus says, teaching them to observe. Now, I can see perhaps some exceptions to that. Maybe you're a lady and you've seen a guy come to Christ or vice versa. Maybe you feel more comfortable with a guy or a girl being. Okay, I get that. But the point is, the point is this. So often what tends to happen is someone will have the opportunity to see someone come to Christ, and then they'll come to someone else. Would you disciple them for me? Or they'll bring them to me. Now, I'm more than glad to disciple people who have already been saved. But I feel like saying, you do it. You know them best. This is your friend or your relative or you know whoever. And I'll be glad to help you with that. But this is something that you should really, really be involved with. So this is a you personally. We must get past the notion that there are quote unquote professionals who do this. None of us are professionals. Okay? We're all learning and growing together. You know, maybe a point even before this is to realize we're all in the process of growing as disciples. You get that, right? I have not reached a spiritual level. The Apostle Paul even said, I have not yet attained. He is pressing on. So we're all in this process of growth. But if God does give you that privilege to see someone come to Christ, then by all means, you should seek to disciple them yourself. Does that make sense? Do you have any questions about that? Yes, ma'am.
I don't have a question, but yeah. It just caused me to think the apostles, the disciples themselves, they weren't instantly all knowledgeable theologians.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even have a Bible to carry along with them. They did not have all the aids that we have now.
Yep.
And sometimes we think, well, you know, they could do it then because they were apostles.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know, the argument is, well, I don't know enough. Well, what's the answer to that?
Learn.
Yeah, study together. Learn together then. It's a glorious thing. Then learn. Take some time to study your Bible more and learn. See how you can learn to do it better. All right, so you should strive to disciple a new convert. Second, discipleship is modeled in the Bible. This is a biblical idea, not just because of the Great Commission, but even just biblical examples of this as well. In the Old Testament, we see this kind of thing. It's not really called this, but we see this concept. For instance, Joshua with Moses. Think of how many years Joshua followed Moses, was with Moses, and helped Moses before Moses died and Joshua took over. Or you think of the relationship with Elijah to Elisha. Or to keep it consistent, Elisha to Elijah. Same kind of thing. Elisha followed. When Elijah was taken up into heaven, Elisha took over. It's a concept. The word discipleship or disciple is not really there, but the concept is. But we really do see it come to full blossom in the New Testament. This is something that is seen in the New Testament. For instance, John the Baptist had disciples. Matthew 9:14, the disciples of John came to him. The Pharisees had disciples. Matthew 22:16, the Pharisees sent to Jesus their disciples. This is a very common practice in this Judaistic type of format. You think of even in secular Greek history, something even like Socrates and Aristotle. Well, I may have gotten my years mixed up there. Were they? Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Were they one after another? Anybody know? I'm asking. You get the idea, though. Okay, scrub the names, but you get the idea. Pharisees had disciples. John the Baptist had disciples. Paul had disciples. Now you don't see it so explicitly said like the Pharisees or John, but think of Paul's disciples like Timothy. Or Titus, or other people that he had, Luke even, who followed him through those missionary journeys, wrote things down. Okay, so this concept is there, but obviously we have the example of Christ. He had these disciples. So this idea of discipleship is modeled for us in the New Testament. Third, discipleship is a relationship with people. A notion that I want to steer us away from is that this is not a program. Discipleship is not a program that we have. These are relationships that we're seeking to build. This whole concept of disciple making, of evangelism, is not a program. It's just who and what we're supposed to be as God gives those opportunities. It's our calling, the Great Commission. And this discipleship aspect is the same. This is a relationship we have. Now, as we talk about this idea, this relationship, this discipleship relationship, and you think about it from a New Testament perspective, there are two primary concepts or ideas innate in this idea of discipleship. For instance, if you are one of Jesus' disciples, or if you are one of John the Baptist's disciples, you would have understood primarily two things that that would mean for you. Can you think of what those two things would be? This idea of, if I'm a disciple of someone, that means specifically two things, at least. What's one?
Following.
Okay, following. Good answer. Think of how many times when Jesus called a man to himself, he would say, follow me. Follow me. Now, this wasn't just, let's see where he goes. This wasn't just meaning a geographic following. That idea of following would have in it, I'm going to follow him to watch him. I'm following to listen to him. I'm following to learn. In fact, I gave it away. That's really the second aspect of this. This idea of learning. Innate in that word of discipleship or disciple is a disciple is a follower learner. Even Jesus says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. Okay? This idea of learning, again, it's it's not just an academic exercise that he was calling these men to. He was calling them to a life of watching him, of listening to him, of following him, seeing his example, not just how he did it, but also saying, this is how I ought to be learning how to do it. Taking his example and seeking to adopt it themselves. It's a relationship. And Jesus even, you know, if you read the Gospels, Jesus taught them much. He did much before them. And then he gave them things to do, gave them the task. They came back. They would talk about that. And then Jesus left them and they did it themselves because they learned. They followed. They learned from his example. They weren't perfect, but they learned from his example. These two ideas of following and learning, those are the core ideas in this idea of discipleship as a relationship. Underneath these, you could also include things like growing, changing. You know, those would be good ideas to include as well. But those are underneath these two key ideas of following and learning. Any comments? Or questions about that? Yeah.
Two comments.
Yep.
I think the first question is what are the strongs or what's the definition of discipleship when they translate it?
Yep.
And then the thought comes to me as far as women are instructed to teach the younger women.
Yep.
So would that essentially be a command for women to teach?
I don't think it's the same word. The word disciple is mathetes, and I believe the Strong's definition, I have to look it up, I think it's learner, is the basic idea. Anybody have Blue Letter Bible you can look it up real quick? I think that's probably pretty close.
Yeah,
I think the word in Titus that you're referring to, Titus 2, that might be the word didasco, to teach.
Okay.
I think. I haven't looked that one up, but that's a guess.
Is it a different concept or just a different?
Slightly. Same kind of idea, though. So, and again, it's the older women, younger women, older men, and younger men.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thought. It's not using the same word, mathetes or matheteo, the verb, but it's the same kind of idea. Yeah. Does that help? Anything else? All right. Discipleship is a lifelong process. Discipleship is a lifelong process. You know, let me go back. I forgot to say a few things that I think are important. So let me go back to this just for a minute. This idea of being a follower learner, to put that in our terms, so you think of even what the Apostle Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 11:1, which I think was the memory verse I gave you 2 weeks ago, which you probably didn't remember, and that's fine. But that verse says, imitate me as I imitate Christ, or mimic me, or follow me. It really is this idea of imitation. And you say, well, how could Paul say that? Paul is literally saying to those Corinthian church people, okay, you look at my example. You seek to imitate me as I seek to imitate Christ. It's like a train. Now, Paul was not saying he is the perfect example or that he was sinless in that by any means. But he was saying, as I'm seeking to follow Christ, you follow me. He called people to look at him, his life, what he was doing, how he was doing it, devote themselves to his teaching, learning from him, and even imitating him. Is that not what we are to do as disciples of Christ? We are to learn from him, look at him in the scriptures, the teaching he and his apostles gave, and imitate it and adopt it as our own. Jesus said in Matthew 10:25, it is enough for a disciple that he be like his teacher. You think about in the big concept of our Christianity, God's goal for us as Christians is to be conformed to the image of his Son. Romans 8:29. To imitate him. Now, we're all going to fall short of that this side of eternity. But we are to strive to grow in that, to follow him, to learn in that, to grow in that, to change in that. That's discipleship. There's a sense of that with a pastor with his flock. I am by no means the perfect model. But there is an aspect as the pastor of this church that I pray, Lord, help them to follow me as I follow Christ. That's the same idea with a parent to their children. At least it ought to be. God, I pray that my children would follow me as I follow Christ. Pray that they would forget our shortcomings and imitate us if we're doing what is honoring to God. It's the same idea. But you think of it even in secular life. A football coach, Bill Belichick, okay, to use the Patriot way, Bill Belichick wants all of his players to latch on to his philosophy. And he has proven that if the players do that, they can be pretty successful. There's a reason why he has the most Super Bowls, I believe, of any NFL coach in history. He's wanting his players to follow him, to buy into what he's teaching, to learn from him, and to do what he says. You think of this in the education world. Some of you have homeschooled. Some others teach in public school or have taught in public schools. It's the same idea. I'm teaching you something, and I want you to follow me in this teaching. To learn what I'm teaching you and to follow it. It's the same kind of idea. Even the other night, or last night, Chris and I were watching a cooking show, one of these, you know, Food Network kind of cooking shows, where you have a coach, professional chef, trying to train others to cook. Hilarious. But those professional chefs they're demonstrating before their students, this is how you are to do it. If you do it this way, your meal will taste good. What are they doing? They're wanting them to follow and to learn. That's all it is. The concept is everywhere. But in our spiritual life, obviously it's that much more important with Christ than it is a cooking show. It's just an illustration. But you get the point. This idea is in many places. Church, family, school, sports, you know, a lot of different places. mimic what is right and honor to God, reject what is not. The truth is that everyone is a disciple. It's all a matter of who are we following. Who is your example that you're following? Who is it that you're listening to? Who is it that you're following, that you're learning from, that you're seeking to mimic? That's a crucial question. Everyone is a disciple. It's all a matter of who or what we're following. And biblically speaking, we're ultimately to follow Christ. That's obvious. But there is the biblical warrant, as Paul demonstrates, to follow godly leaders as well. Okay, this is discipleship. And as you have the opportunity, if you have the opportunity to lead someone to Christ, which is a great thing, as you're seeking to disciple them, your prayer should be, God, help me to model before them what it is to follow Christ. I'm not going to be perfect in that, but I pray that they would follow me as I follow Christ. That's this relationship. Okay? You get that? Any thoughts or anything you want to add to that at all? All right, now let's go on to this last one. Discipleship is a lifelong process. Again, you talk about the New Testament model. There was an intention of lifelong learning, really, till one or both parties die. Joshua followed Moses till Moses died. Elisha followed Elijah till Elijah was taken up to heaven. You think of John the Baptist, disciples till he died or till he told them to go to Christ. But even the disciples of Christ, they were his disciples until he died and left them. Same kind of idea that I would propose as you have the opportunity to disciple a new believer yourself, I would propose that you should have the mentality this is a lifelong commitment. Again, because it's not a program. Programs come and go. Programs usually have a start and a finish. Discipleship is life. Now, that may be cut short because of different things. People can move away. People can pass away. We get all that. It may not always happen like this. But I'm proposing this idea, because I think it is a biblical idea, that as you're thinking of this notion of discipleship, you should be thinking, Lord, I want to disciple this person for the rest of my or their life. Let me also add to this, as we're thinking about this whole concept of making maturing disciples, you're not going to win a million people to Christ. But what would happen if God allowed you to win one, to see one person that you know come to Christ and you disciple them for the rest of your life? That would be an incredible thing. And that person, that new believer, grows, learns, and changes, and they see someone come to Christ, and they disciple them. That's the goal, to perpetuate this discipleship relationship. You can call it a culture if you want, a discipleship culture in a church. That's what I want to see here. I want to see us develop and embrace a culture of making and maturing disciples. We're not in it to make notches on our belt. How many people can we see? We're here to build disciples, which is a lifelong process that will never end in the life of our church until Christ comes. And we're all to be involved in it. We can all tell people about Christ. And if you can tell people about Christ, then you should be able to disciple them and learn with them and grow with them. This is a culture. It's a discipleship, lifelong kind of process. As Christians, we are lifelong disciples of Christ ultimately, but there should also be this idea of following and learning from someone else who is following and learning from Christ too. Now, I want to end this discussion here. I know it's only 11:45, but these might be somewhat new concepts to people. Do you have any thoughts or any questions about any of this so far? Next week, try to get into more specific notions, but just want to lay some groundwork here about this idea itself. Any thoughts you have? Anything at all?
was just going to comment that I think, you know, parenting is such a delight. It's also exhausting. But I think one of the things that's the most sobering is that these are eternal beings, and that responsibility of discipling this eternal being for Christ was just an overwhelming thought at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I wonder at how often we fail to keep that in front of us. Mm-hmm. We want them to be healthy. We want them to get good grades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want them to be successful in life. But in the great grand scheme of things, we need to keep before us that their discipleship is the most important thing ever.
Right. Yep.
As parents.
Yep. If they're not like Christ, if they're not saved and growing to be like Christ, it doesn't matter how much money they make. Good. Other thoughts? Want to add here? Yeah, John?
I was just thinking that if we are interested in becoming a disciple, then the person that we would want to learn under, we would have to have respect for them and a trust in them and a basic agreement with
mm-hmm.
in this case, you know, doctrinal positions. But so you have, if you're in a position of becoming a disciple, you have to do a bit of assessment of who you want to disciple under and
yeah.
not just blindly follow.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Contextually, this should all be handled under the local New Testament church.
Correct.
Because in verse 19, it says, go ye therefore and teach all nations, but then qualified by saying, baptizing them in the name of the Father,
mm-hmm.
which is an administration of the church,
yeah.
not an individual.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to get in more of that next week. But you're exactly right. Yes. Other thoughts? Yes, Deb?
I don't know if this could boomerang in people's thoughts, but I was just wondering if in some way we kind of escape the thought or the responsibility of discipleship because we know as Christians we need to be humble and we're not perfect, and so therefore we just kind of say, well, enough disciple, and that's an easy escape to say, yeah, I can't speak to somebody because I'm not perfect yet, and
yep.
I have my issues, and
right.
I'm not good at that. And so, we, in our humbleness, we draw back, and it's like an escape. It's an easy out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, brings up an interesting topic. Why don't we want to disciple someone? Kind of tagging on what you just said. You mentioned one. Why don't we want to do this? Why are we afraid to do it?
Outside.
How so?
We don't want to show that we are still not in the right.
Okay, we don't want to. Right. Yeah, good. Okay.
Yeah, it's also going on with Mrs. Wobacher's. It's also the fact that we sometimes fear the unknown. And
what's the unknown?
The unknown.
I don't know what's unknown. I think it's the unknown of what are they going to ask me? Or what are they going to think? Or what's going to happen? I think those are the unknowns that we're afraid of. Yeah. Good. Steph?
A lot of times it's also going to take much more time.
Yep.
And as busy people, we might think, I just don't have time to go and talk to them once a week, or I don't have time to, you know, answer that phone call every day, or
yep.
whatever.
Yep. Yeah, hold on. Brian, first.
I was just going to say, I've both been a disciple and been discipled and actively discipled other people.
Yep.
In both ways, you learn so much.
Right.
Being taught by godly men has been a wonderful blessing, and developed significant relationships with men that live 3,000 miles away
mm-hmm.
that, you know, I can call them up or talk to them, and it's as if I have saw them just the other day.
Right.
We've got that bond and union in Christ, so
mm-hmm.
developing that relationship is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And then learning through teaching somebody is also just an amazing process.
Mm-hmm. They say the teacher learns more than the student. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you're exploring this. Deb?
I just thought it was interesting the stuff that he said about time. Giving time. I was just speaking to my dad the other day, and he brought up, in a way, to try to encourage me, that sometimes we don't know when that moment will happen, when the neighbor is there, and I need to drop what I'm doing and go to her. And even the whole continuing to meet with that person, that one is right, because we go there. We think, I already have a problem with my day. I can't see how I'm going to fit that in.
Mm-hmm.
But in the whole, like this guy explained to me how he has different lists, the A list, the B list, the C list, and which lists are more important in the whole realm of our responsibility. Spiritual list is always going to ace everything else.
Sure, yeah.
And obviously, that's where God wants us to be, and He's going to work out those time issues. If that is His will, that we are involved in that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wonder if there shouldn't be something called the Martha Baptist Church. We're so busy doing so many other things, none of which are necessarily wrong or sinful. We're just so busy that we forget the necessary thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would submit this is part of that necessary thing, is to be involved in this. And it might mean evaluating, where is my time going? And what may I need to give up or at least lessen, so that this doesn't seem like a burden. Because it does take an investment of time and energy, sometimes money, to be actively involved in someone's life like this. That's true. That's true. Any other thoughts you want to add? Why don't we do this? Good thoughts. In many ways, somewhat similar is why we don't evangelize. It takes time. I'm afraid of what they're going to say. They're going to ask me something I don't know. Similar kinds of concepts. Just boils all down to what Michelle said. It's just pride. It's just pride. And we just got to get over that and say, okay, God wants me to do this. We know this. The Great Commission cannot be denied. So how does God want me to prepare myself to do that? How can I grow in my understanding of, in my practice of, my mentality of this idea? Evangelism, discipleship, same orb of the Great Commission, two sides of the same coin, if you want to think it that way, but very, very important in the life of a believer. We'll talk more specifics, Lord willing, next week, bringing the church element. That'll be a big component of it, and talk more about this specifically, Lord willing, next week. All right, you are dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you.